In our final matter this morning, 2022-1203, State of Ohio versus Jamie Torin. I would like to thank Judge Ronald Lewis of the 2nd District for staying in place of Justice Dieters, and now Judge Sean Gallagher from the 8th District Court of Appeals has just slid down the bench to take the seat of Justice Fisher while Justice DeWine joins us for this last case of the morning. Little musical chairs. So, on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Cummings, good morning.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, Justices. My name is Phil Cummings. I'm here from the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. I also want to express the state's appreciation for the court taking this case in, because I think it's an issue that comes up. It's not uncommon for this issue to come up, and I think that citizens of Ohio are going to benefit however this court decides this case today. It's the state's position that the Court of Appeals below erred because they basically overruled the trial court's decision overruling the motion to suppress. And the reason is Torin challenged the search of his truck by saying there was no probable cause and there was no exception to the warrant requirement. The state met that challenge and demonstrated that there was an exception that applied. It was the inventory exception. And the trial court found that that had indeed been established by the evidence, and the Court of Appeals did not credit that factual finding. And I think that that basically is the error here. The deputy testified that there was a policy in the sheriff's department that he followed. He also mentioned that his policy, but
was that policy ever produced in written form or in supervisory officer form, or was that policy ever produced at all other than the officer?
No, it was not.
And isn't the case law clear that when that happens, the court doesn't accept that there is a, if a policy is not produced, and there's a violation of the Fourth Amendment?
No, that's what brings us here. The case law, I think, from this court says you don't really need to enter a written policy.
Not written, but there needs to be an establishment of what the if, please correct me if I'm wrong, the officer said, pursuant to policy, this is what I do, this is my policy, this is department policy, but the policy was never set forth.
Well, that's exactly the gray area that we're discussing here today.
Well, let me follow up on that. Isn't the policy clear? Inventory searches are there to protect the police if they're going to take a car for a valid reason from accusations that something was taken by them that was there, right? Something of value. It's a good policy, right? To have an inventory.
Absolutely.
So there's no question that the defendant in this case was driving, was not authorized to be driving the vehicle. Is that correct?
Correct.
And pursuant to that fact, the vehicle was impounded. It's subject to an inventory search for that very policy.
That's the state's position. That's correct, Your Honor. Yes.
But the video doesn't show that an inventory search actually took place. There was no list of the truck's contents. It looks like the First District looked at it as a suspicionless search for evidence, and that the inventory search justification was an after-the-fact pretext. Can you help us with a response to that?
Well, I think that interpretation goes to the totality of the circumstances analysis here. I think it's important to note here that the Court of Appeals below essentially found the impoundment proper here. They didn't even discuss it. The impoundment issue is a preliminary issue that is distinct and separate from the inventory search. So the fact that the Court of Appeals immediately went to the inventory search aspect of this means, in the state's position, that they found sub silentio, they found the impoundment proper.
Was the search before or after the impoundment?
I believe it was after, and it was, if not concurrent.
Why did the vehicle have to be impounded if the owner of the vehicle arrived at the scene?
I'm sorry.
Why did the vehicle have to be impounded if the owner, a licensed driver, arrived at the scene?
Well, the impoundment decision is within the discretion of the police officer.
But why, when the car can be turned over to the rightful owner lawfully?
Well, again, it's a proper decision that's within the officer's discretion, even if there is somebody to drive the car away.
Wasn't the decision made to impound the vehicle and actually the inventory search conducted before the owner arrived at the scene?
I believe so, yes. And I think that the mother, I think, who was going to present herself as a potential driver, is the person that they're saying could have driven the car away. But the case law is clear from the Supreme Court and from this court that evidence of a less intrusive means to accomplish the task does not mean that the officer can still not...
To accomplish what task, though?
To perform his duties. The officer had the discretion, given these circumstances, to impound the vehicle. The fact that there was a potential driver that was available to drive it away does not affect his exercise of discretion. And the Supreme Court has said that they will not question the officer's discretion in a case like this. That's Katie versus Dombrowski.
But I don't see in the record, whether it's by the video or by the documents in the record, that there actually was an inventory made. There was no list of the truck's contents. So, yes, he opened the door and found a gun, mm-hmm. but there's nothing in the record that indicates that an inventory search was actually made. So you still contend that there was an inventory search?
Well, I think it's implicit in the fact that he searched the car and found the gun in the console that obviously there was an inventory search done. I think if you're asking, was there a written list made at the time and presented at the hearing, I don't think that's a requirement, just like a written policy is not a requirement for a valid inventory search.
So what makes inventory would presume that someone's doing an inventory and cataloging contents. So I, in my discretion, decide I'm going to impound a car once I've stopped a vehicle and find a driver that's driving under suspension. So I immediately then decide in my discretion that I'm going to tow the car and perform an inventory search, and I actually do create an inventory, a catalog of all of the contents of the car, just so that I cannot be accused of stealing something or there's an allegation something's there before the tow truck driver gets there and takes it to the impoundment lot. So to Justice Bruner's question, is there an inventory sheet for this stop, for this impoundment?
I don't believe there's an inventory sheet in the record, Your Honor. I don't think that was entered in.
So, Counselor, what makes the search an inventory search as opposed to a search for evidence or paraphernalia? Or what makes it an inventory search if there is no inventory?
Well, I think that the court is entitled to credit the officer's testimony. He testified that he was going to do an inventory search of the vehicle after he decided to impound it. And he said that there's a policy he has in the Sheriff's Department, and he followed that policy. And based upon his testimony, the trial court is entitled to credit that testimony.
But what makes an inventory search in that instance different from a warrantless search, a suspicionless search, or any other kind of search? What made that search different?
It was an administrative search, not governed by probable cause. It's an administrative search under the caretaking responsibilities of police that's recognized, and it's only to be analyzed as to whether or not it was reasonable under the circumstances or not. And I think that's the key here. I think that we have to see, was the officer's conduct here reasonable given the circumstances?
But you're the appellant. Why isn't it in the record? You're the appellant. The state's the appellant. The appellant would want everything in the record that would support their case, whether it's at the level of prosecution, at the trial court, or at the Court of Appeals, or before this court. Why isn't there a written search, a written inventory in the record?
Well, at this level, the state, as the appellant, could not add to the record. The record would be what it would be before the trial court.
So it's never been in the record?
I don't think this an inventory list was put into the to the record. No.
The officer testified that it was an inventory search. That
yes.
was in evidence at the suppression hearing.
He did.
Was an argument made that this was pretextual?
There was an argument made that it was pretextual and the impoundment was invalid. The appellant never really challenged the existence of an inventory policy or the lack of compliance with it.
And the trial court judge who assesses credibility found that to...
The trial judge, being in the best position to judge credibility, listened to the officer, decided that he was credible. The officer said that, yeah, we have a policy. I followed it.
So in this case, I guess I go back to, you're saying it's an inventory search because the officer said it was, but yet there's no inventory list. It's like, in my mind, if I invite you over to dinner and I have no food, is it really still that I've invited you to a dinner? But more importantly, if the reason for these inventory searches are to protect the officers mm-hmm. who can be accused of, you know, stealing objects or to have something be found in the car after it's impounded, or, you know, so it's for the protection of the officer and also the owner of the car.
Absolutely.
Then if there is no documentation here, what if Mr. Torrin said, I had my fiance's diamond ring in the glove compartment?
Well,
there's no way to...
These are the kind of questions we're all going to benefit by this court's decision today. Is this court going to require an inventory list be entered into evidence?
But it's not just the list, though. The video shows that there is no inventory search made. The video itself that's in the record doesn't show an inventory search. Only opening the door, finding the gun, and that's it. So I don't know how this is going to be.
Well,
the evidence is the evidence or the lack thereof. How do we make law from evidence that's not there?
Well, I think you just apply the law. The law is that you have to look at the totality of circumstances. And based upon everything that, including the video, including the officer's testimony, including the testimony that there is a policy, and including the fact that none was entered into evidence, considering all that, that's all part of the totality of the circumstances.
Let me ask you about the video. So there is a video where the officer opens the car door. He says, I'm conducting an inventory search. And then he starts going through and identifying different items in the car. And he only finds the gun. I mean, is the video supposed to be the inventory list?
There's an argument that could certainly be used as that. There's an argument there to be made to that extent.
But how is that different from a suspicion list search? What I'm saying is, how do we know from that video that he's just not searching the car when he doesn't have a constitutional right to do that?
Well, because the circumstances of the stop, the fact that this particular man was unlicensed, his license had been suspended for 3 years, he'd previously been pulled over in this very truck for driving under suspension. This was clearly a situation where the officer had the authority and the discretion to impound the vehicle, and basically the Court of Appeals found that by not even addressing that. So we're left with, given all that's in the record, did the trial court err by finding the totality of circumstances demonstrated reasonableness here? It's the state's position the trial court did not err, because there is no law yet in this state that requires the state to enter into evidence a written inventory policy or a written inventory list. I mean, this is all goes to the totality of the circumstances given the present law right now. If this court wants to narrow that.
The other side doesn't disagree that the written list is not required. The question is, was there any testimony, is there anything in the record as to the policy at all?
Not about the details of it, no, just that there was one. And as I read the case law, that's all that's required. You have to show that there's a policy. This was not pretextual. It was done in good faith.
So you're saying all you have to do is say there's a policy?
The circumstances of that statement have to be supported by other factors in the record.
And what supported it here? What supported the policy here, other than the officer testifying, I did this pursuant to policy?
Well, the officer's statement that he was doing an inventory search is supported by the circumstances of the stop. The stop was valid. That has been held. The impoundment was valid. That has been implicitly held. And so now we have a situation where a man who has been driving under suspension is not going to get this car back. And the trial, I mean, the, I'm sorry, the deputies decided to impound the vehicle, which is perfectly within his discretion. And under those circumstances, it is reasonable and it makes complete logical sense. The car will be towed. And under these circumstances, that's when inventory searches occur.
In the transcript, he says, it's my personal policy, and every officer, it should be their policy as well. What is your best pinpoint site for me in the transcript where he says, this is the policy of the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office?
I will find you the best quote I have when I return to the podium. He doesn't say it in those phrases. He says there is a sheriff's department policy. That's as close as he gets. As far as his statement that it's his policy, that was better left unsaid, but he did say that the sheriff's department has a policy and he was acting pursuant to that.
Well, didn't he say on page 11, line 4 of the transcript, due to the stop and the status, what our policy is, meaning the sheriff's department's policy, an inventory search of that vehicle was conducted, any damage, anything. I've been doing this occupation road patrol just short of 20 years. I'm systematic about how we do tows because if there's any damage in the car, valuables can be in the car and officers need to be accountable.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he was discussing not only the sheriff's policy, but he wanted to make clear what his policy was, too.
About how he conducted an inventory search. He did that based upon what the status was of the sheriff's department's policy, correct?
He did it based upon his, I'm sorry.
His interpretation of what the status of the sheriff's department's policy was.
I would think so, yes.
Okay.
So shouldn't that sheriff department's policy have been before the court to say, I mean, what if he didn't follow the guidelines of the sheriff department's policy? Well, do we have to take his word that he did?
It would be sufficient if the policy had been entered in, but it was not necessary. The trial court has the ability to credit his testimony that he was acting pursuant to policy.
So you're saying the trial court gets to say, yes, there's a policy, even though there's no evidence of it, either in other than the officer's testimony, and then you have to accept the officer's testimony that he followed the policy.
Absolutely.
That's not in place or for anybody to see. I mean, what if the policy said if a owner of a car arrives to remove the car from the scene, then the officer shall allow the car owner to remove the car?
That would be an interesting analysis in a totality, should that have been the case. But really here,
We don't know if the policy says. I mean, what are the other things the policy says?
The policy was not entered into evidence. All we know is that this was a standard inventory search, and the gun was found in the passenger console, which, as this court found in State versus Mesa, this is a very common area where you're going to find personal valuables, in a very common area that would be covered in any standard inventory search. So that's another part of the totality of circumstances here. It's not.
What's your case law support for totality of the circumstances?
Katie versus Drombowski on down. They said that inventory searches are subject to a reasonableness totality of the circumstances analysis.
So isn't that the definition, whether the officer's actions are reasonable?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Isn't that essentially what we're looking at, whether the officer's actions were reasonable or
Absolutely.
Not?
Absolutely. Ultimately, that is the ultimate analysis that we're here for, and that's what the trial judge below was there to analyze. And keep in mind, the state of the law, arguably, and I would say it still is, that the inventory policy is not required to be entered in to these hearings. Also, troopers' testimony alone has often been parts of these cases and has been used to establish facts by themselves. I think this happened in Leak. There was a reference in Leak to the fact that a trooper's testimony alone could be sufficient. It wasn't there for other reasons. Banks Harvey just recently, the trooper's testimony there was discussed, and that was a part of the fabric of the decision. It was never challenged that there was no policy in existence. That part of the trooper's testimony was just accepted, and I think that's a point you made in your dissent.
You're well into your rebuttal. You're over time.
I'm sorry. I will yield.
Mr. Smith, I understand you're sharing your time with Jonathan Sidney.
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 7 minutes for Mr. Sidney.
Okay.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, justices, and may it please the court. We are before this court on the issue of whether a warrantless inventory search of a vehicle, which was unlawfully impounded, is unreasonable.
Well, let's stop there, because you seem to be intermixing these two things. Is the question here whether the impoundment was lawful or whether the search was lawful?
There are actually two different components.
Are they both before us?
I'm sorry?
Are both those things before us? Because there's two different bodies of law, two different standards for those two different things, right?
They're separate issues, but yet they're intertwined, because the inventory search has to involve the lawful impoundment of a vehicle.
Right.
Those
are two different issues, right? There are two different bodies of case law, two different standards. So which one are we here on? Or are we here on both?
Ultimately, we're here on the issue of the inventory search itself. But one of the requirements of an inventory search is that the vehicle has to be unlawfully impounded.
Sure. But my question, I'm just trying to get at whether you're challenging the impoundment itself or whether you're challenging the search. Because if you're following the impoundment, then there's a certain line of cases that cover that, Bertin and others. The search is a different body of case law. The officer has a lot more discretion in the impoundment than in the actual search.
Well, ultimately, we're challenging the search, and I do want to clarify that. However, as part of that, the impoundment is the issue of the legality of the impoundment is part of the issue of the legality of the search, and that's why we bring that up.
Well, and I would agree with you, but your proposition states where the stop and impoundment of a vehicle is lawful, the subsequent inventory search of the vehicle in accordance with the policy procedure is not rendered constitutionally reasonable by the state's failure to introduce the actual written policy into evidence or the deputy's failure to, that's not your position. The state's position is that we accept it is dealing with a lawful impoundment, but you're saying, even though the state's posed their proposition that way, it wasn't lawful, and even if it is, there's still an issue of whether the search was lawful.
Yes, and okay. Even if we, for the sake of argument, assume an unlawful impoundment, the state still has threshold requirements.
Assuming a lawful impoundment.
Yes. Well, let's focus on that. Why is it hypothetical? What was unlawful about this impoundment? Your client was driving without a license, right?
Yes.
Without authorization to do so, a suspended license.
Yes. He had a suspended license. There was a traffic stop that took place. The deputy based the traffic stop on the claimed inability to see the temporary tag of the vehicle in the truck's window. That okay. was the original.
If reason. That's correct, that's a lawful stop.
Yes, and I don't. We're not. Disputing the, okay. We're not here on the issue of the stop.
So what makes impoundment lawful, unlawful?
In this case, it was because the appellee's mother arrived at the scene. Now, appellee's mother.
So would you have us write a decision that every time that an unlawful stop, as long as there's someone there that can legally drive it home, that's what we should write? That the officer has to, even though they have the discretion to impound that vehicle, arrest the person for not driving legally, that because his mother was there, the officer was required to give the car to the mother if she was a legal driver.
In fact, they could have cited the mother, couldn't they, for unlawful entrustment? In fact, they could have cited her probably twice because she was caught driving the same vehicle recently, correct?
Can we answer one question at a time? Would you please answer Justice Donnelly's question first?
Yes, but thank you. As far as the impoundment, we don't see the need to create a bright line rule as far as impoundments. Ultimately, there's going to be some officer discretion that comes into play with deciding whether to impound a vehicle, and we're not asking the court to overturn that. In this particular case, however, the circumstances were such that it was not a reasonable decision to impound in this particular case. And the reason that the vehicle was impounded was to get to the inventory search. That the statements by the officer, the conduct of the officer, as shown on the video, indicates that the officer's goal here was to search this vehicle. That was the underlying justification, not only for the impoundment, but for the inventories, for the claimed inventory.
Judge Lewis's question.
I mean, there's a lot of discretion, essentially, in those stops, correct? I mean, that's my point. I mean, the officer made a number of different discretionary decisions on that stop, correct?
They did, Your Honor. And
while you think it may not be reasonable, there was nothing wrong with that impoundment, correct? I mean, you may have acted differently. You may have let the mother drive the car, but he certainly wasn't required to do that, was he?
Well, we wouldn't concede that the vehicle was lawfully impounded. Our position is it was unlawfully impounded. However, even if the court hypothetically takes the position that it was lawfully impounded, the inventory search was still not conducted in a constitutionally reasonable manner. And so there are different thresholds that the state has to cross or abide by in order for this search to be constitutional. And one of those, of course, is the impoundment. One of those is that is the reasonableness of the search.
Well, let me ask you about that. So the real objection is that there weren't enough details about the inventory policy, right? That's while the officer said this is our policy, that we have a policy to do an inventory search, he didn't, there weren't a lot of details about what that was. But here the gun was found in the console, is that right?
I believe it was found in the door.
Okay, and so under any kind of inventory search, an officer is going to look in the door, right? He's going to look in those kinds of, this wasn't found in a closed container, it wasn't in the, you know, closed here in the trunk, it wasn't some of those questions that, you know, seem particularly difficult. It was, you know, a place that any inventory search is going to cover, right?
That may be the case. And the state emphasized that, I know on appellant's argument, they emphasized that this was in a, quote, common area, as was talked about in State v. Mesa. That actually underscores the need for the state or for police departments to follow a standardized inventory search policy and to have details as to what that policy is.
So that's really what you raised down below. So you had two prongs underneath the warrantless vehicle search. And the first one was the state didn't provide evidence that a standardized inventory search policy existed. And second, that the search as conducted was pursuant to that standardized policy. So what is it that would make both of those?
As far as the evidence of the policy, there has to be more than the officer's testimony. And this has been talked about not only in State v. Beasley, but in other appellate districts that have followed similar reasoning. For example, the Second District in State versus Wilcoxon. A bare assertion standing alone is not sufficient. There must be evidence as to the policy. The state has to show what the policy is, and it has to show that the officer's conduct conformed to that policy.
And so when your opposing counsel at this point applied totality of circumstances, according to his brief, that only applies to belief in a traffic violation to make the initial stop. Do you know of any case law that would apply totality of circumstances to this situation so that a trial judge could listen to the testimony of a police officer and assume there was a policy and assume that the police officer followed that policy?
As far as inventory searches?
Correct. And when this totality of the circumstances, have you ever known for it to apply to the inventory search situation and the testimony we're talking about?
As far as whether the search was reasonable?
Whether it actually happened according to a policy, and whether the policy was actually followed.
Yes. In fact, there have been several courts of appeals cases that have held that the testimony is insufficient. One of those is, for example, State versus Wilcoxon and State versus Bozeman out of the 2nd District, State versus Flynn out of the 3rd District, State versus Greeno out of the 5th District, and State versus Perry out of the 11th District.
And in none of those cases did they apply totality of the circumstances, correct?
They look to the reasonableness of the policy, so I believe that would fit within the totality of the circumstances framework.
So you're well within the time you reserve for counsel.
Yes.
It's up to you. It's your time.
I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for Mr. Sidney. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sidney, good morning.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy. Good morning, Your Honors. I'd like to pick up on the question of whether a policy itself can independently justify a search or render it constitutional, the fact that it merely exists. I think this court in Leak and this court in Banks Harvey has been very clear that the answer is no. And the reason why we need details of the policy, whether it's in testimonial form or in written form, we're not demanding that it necessarily has to be written, although that's a best practice, is that in order to determine whether a policy renders a search reasonable, the court first has to look at the policy and ask whether that policy can meet the baseline constitutional requirements as set forward by the Fourth Amendment, by Bertin, and by this court in Leak and Banks Harvey. And as Judge Sutton recently clarified, writing for the Sixth Circuit in Morgan just a couple days ago, exceptions to the community invoking the community caretaking exceptions to the warrant requirement, that's got to be really narrowly tailored to the justifications. It can't become a carte blanche catch-all to simply justify an intrusion that would otherwise not be reasonable. And what this court ultimately needs to look to is the reasonableness of the search. And here we have an impoundment of a vehicle that was lawfully parked, that had no safety issues that would have prevented it from being safely driven away. It was a vehicle where several minutes into the stop, and the court can see this on the body camera footage, about 3 minutes in, Mr. Torn makes clear to the officer that it is his mother's vehicle and that his mother is right down the block.
Would it have been reasonable to release that vehicle to the mother, the same mother that apparently let him drive it on a prior occasion with him not having a driver's license?
I think so, Your Honor, and here's why. When you look at the foundations of the community caretaking doctrine, and when you really look at KD and the kind of circumstances that the community caretaking exception is grounded in, what it relates to is circumstances where there are vehicles in the roadway that are posing a hazard to the public and that are affecting the safety of the public by their presence. KD involved, for example, a driver who was intoxicated and actually passed out on the highway. But what the community caretaking exception is not meant to do is to allow for preemptive seizures of private property without a warrant in order to prevent the possibility of future criminal activity. That has to come somewhere else. That's not what the community caretaking exception is about.
So it sounds like you're asking us to affirm on other grounds. So affirm on the ground that there was no basis for a seizure here.
Your Honor, I think the court could affirm on other grounds, but I do want to tie this back to the existence of the policy and why the particular circumstances of this case are relevant to that legal analysis. Again, it goes back to if a policy is justifying the constitutionality, if the policy becomes the basis to justify the reasonableness of the search, the policy itself has to be reasonable. And if we don't have the policy, we don't know what it allows for, we don't know what its criteria is, and we don't know, but I think we can take a pretty good guess from the facts in this case, that if Deputy Singleton, crediting his testimony and the light most favorable to him, was actually acting in accordance with his policy, that's a policy that allows for tows under unreasonable circumstances.
Yeah, but again, I think that's, now you're conflating the two different issues, right? Whether the policy allows for tows under reasonable circumstances, that's not the inventory policy, right? I mean, under Bertin, these are really separate inquiries,
Well, Your Honor, I think in Leak, this court did recognize that Bertine's analysis of inventory policies is equally applicable to policies governing the impoundment decision. I think
that's certainly not the path the Supreme Court has taken.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's the path this court has taken in paragraphs,
We're still ultimately bound by this U.S. Supreme Court's interpretation of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that Bertine makes clear that policies that govern impoundment and inventory searches need to be based on standard criteria and not based on suspicion of criminal activity. And when it crosses those bounds, then it's outside the community caretaking function. I think that in Leak, this court pretty explicitly.
But what is the evidence here that it's based on suspicion of criminal activity? I mean, it seems fairly reasonable that if someone's stopped without a driver's license, the police are going to tow the car. It's standard to do an inventory search when a car is going to be towed. So what is there that makes it different here that would make you think that this is a pretext?
A couple things on that, Your Honor. I'm into my rebuttal time, but if the court would allow it. First of all, I think that the tow based on the driver not having a license, that's maybe a legitimate community caretaking function if there's no one else on the scene to take care of the car to take it into its possession.
So I keep hearing this that the mother was there, but the mother wasn't there until after the search, until after after the decision been made to impound the car, right? She shows up at the end. I mean, this keeps getting conflated in the briefs, but.
And I think one thing that's important to clarify about the time frame here is, first of all, the officer is notified about the mother being down the street pretty immediately. He takes no further inquiry on that. And I think what Morgan, the Sixth Circuit decision from just the other day, makes really clear is that when there's no exigency, officers are required at least to explore the most minimal kind of alternatives that might be available to them. They can't just take a car and say there's nothing else we could have done. There is a reasonableness nexus to the community caretaking requirement. And it's our submission, Your Honor, that it's simply not reasonable under these circumstances. I also do want to just point out for the court that if one takes a careful look at the body camera footage, the deputy repeatedly indicates, and the pin sites to the points of the footage are included in our brief, but the deputy repeatedly indicates that he would have had discretion to release the car to Mr. Torren's mother absent the felony arrest and absent finding the gun. He says that about three times, both to Mr. Torren and to Mr. Torren's mother.
Under Bertine, that doesn't seem to be a problem, right?
I think under Bertine it would be a problem, Your Honor, and the reason is that Bertine does not permit for the exercise of discretion when it's based upon suspicion of criminal activity, and that's exactly what we have here.
What was your second point? You said that not having licenses is legitimate under the community caretaking exception. What was point two?
Your Honor, I believe I wanted to get into a little bit more of the factual background that I just outlined for Justice DeWine. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I would just simply note that I think the state's proposition of law can be essentially reduced down to trust us, we're the government. We say there's a policy, but we don't have to tell you what it is, and you should just assume that it's reasonable. I think this court's precedent in Leak requires more. I think Bertine requires more. I'm happy to answer any further questions, but in the absence of that, we would just ask that the court affirm or dismiss as improvidently allowed.
Thank you. Mr. Cummings, you went beyond the time because of all of our questioning, so I'll give you a minute to wrap up.
Quickly, I know I promised you page citations as to his policy remarks, which I see the court's found them already. Page 11, he talks about what the sheriff's policy is. He calls it our policy. Also page 25, that's not the policy of the department. He was not going to let this person drive away. As to your question, Justice Bruner, the earliest case I'm looking at is 1973, which discusses inventory searches in the Fourth Amendment. It says the ultimate standard is one of reasonableness, and reasonableness depends upon the facts and circumstances of each case. So I think the standard that we're all looking at here is going to be reasonableness at the end of the day. Was it reasonable for the trial court to credit the deputy's testimony that there was a policy and he followed it? Until there's case law that says you have to have a policy admitted into evidence, the trial court was entitled to credit that. And
what's your case site? What's the site of the case? What's the name of the case?
Katie, 413 United States 433.
Thank you.
Until there's case law to the contrary, I think we take testimony from witnesses as evidence of facts all the time and base decisions on them. That's all we have here. The trial court listened to the deputy, believed him, thought he had credibility, and saw no reason to doubt it, given that this was not opening a closed container or a locked trunk. I mean, this is a passenger console. This is a textbook inventory search. So there was no red flags here at all. So I think the issue is clear. Any guidance this court can give on this would be appreciated, but I think the case law as it is right now supports what the trial court did.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll receive a decision from the court. Marshall, please close the court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.